Jen, and today I'm joined by Marima, Karen, and Kyle. Hey, guys.
Hi.
Hey.
And today is our talk about the Queen of the Tierling. But before we get into all of that, we're going to discuss what we've been reading. So, Kyle, do you want to start with what you've been reading?
Yeah, it's only one book, as always, it seems. But I've started Shovel Ready because Karen gave it to me during Comic-Con like a month ago. And I really like it so far. I'm only like a few pages in, but I really like the style so far. It's really great. I'm looking forward to all the mayhem and horribleness.
That one's really different. Like, the style in which it's written is really different. So I thought it was cool too.
Okay, so Karen, what have you been reading? Because you've been reading some exciting things lately.
I have. You know the things that I've been reading.
I know.
Let's see. I don't remember quite where I left off last time. I think I might have mentioned that I read Serenade by Emily Keeble. Maybe. I'm not sure. But that one was okay. Wasn't super into it, but the ending was really good. So if I happen to get my hands on the sequel, I might read that. It was about like sirens and stuff, which is usually my thing, but wasn't quite sure I liked how it was used in the world. So I don't know, just one of those things that I think is like a personal preference. But aside from that, more exciting things is I did read Jellicoe Road, which Marima was gonna not be friends with me anymore if I didn't read that by Comic-Con, but I did it and I liked it. It was very good. Took me a little while to get into it, but it was very, very good by the end. And I actually want to go back and reread it to kind of pick up on some things. And now that I know where the story is going, just to be able to enjoy it a bit more, I think. And then I also read Anna and the French Kiss and Lola Woo-hoo! And the Boy Next Door. both of which were good. I really, really liked Anna. Lola was a little bit harder to get into. I kept having to put it down because it really stressed me out. I hate those kind of stories where it's like one person is into somebody else, but that person like likes both people and they don't know what to do. And it's like, just make a decision.
Make the right decision.
We know what decision you're going to make. Just make it already. So that was a little frustrating. But by the end, I really, really, really liked the end. And I'm super excited for Isla. I have it. I just haven't started it yet. But I have a feeling I'm really going to like that. And then I also read Zack and Mia, which is so, so good. I really, really liked it. It's sort of like The Fault in Our Stars, but better. and that's me saying that as you know, the resident person who does like John Green, but yeah, I thought it was really, really good. So if you like The Fault in Our Stars, read Zack and Mia. It's different from The Fault in Our Stars. It's not like a knockoff or anything, but it's really good. And I also read Ender's Game and then watched the movie and got really disappointed in the movie. So that was it. I read a lot.
First time you've ever been disappointed in a movie when it's been a book first.
Yeah, is it?
I think so.
Wow.
Look at you.
Whoa. You guys are rubbing off. You know.
See, you spent a week with us. Clearly we've rubbed off on you a little because you spent a whole week with us.
I was just going to say that. It was all my exposure to Marima.
I liked the Ender's Game movie. Don't blame this on me.
It was so bad.
I loved it. I liked it so much.
That you two will very rarely agree on anything. I love it. I love it.
Not on purpose.
Fantastic. All right, Miss Marima, you have a list about 5 miles long. Why don't you go ahead and start it?
I can't remember what I was up to when we recorded last time, but I think I was still in the middle of the Heroes of Olympus series, so I finished that, like, the next day.
Yeah, I think you finished it, like, while we were talking.
possibly, yeah. And I really liked it. I liked it a lot more than the Percy Jackson series. I'm excited for the last book, and I'm glad I read it all now, because then I don't have to wait. It just comes out in, like, a couple months, so that's fine.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a lot better than Percy Jackson. And then I also read Isla and the Happily Ever After at some point since we last recorded, which was amazing, and I loved it. And I immediately regretted giving it to Karen because I wanted to read it again. And I even asked her, she'd had it for a week, and I was like, Karen, have you read it yet? Can I take it home with me? And she was like, have we met? Really? So unfortunately, only read that once, but that was amazing. And then since I've been home, I've just been catching up on things. So I read The Rapunzel Dilemma by Jen Kloster, which is the sequel to The Cinderella Moment that came out last year. And it's really cute. It's like a modern fairy tale, pretty clear from the title. But it's sweet, and you know, it's like very much a romance, so if you're into that, you'll enjoy it. It's got a lot of like fashion, and this one's about acting. The first one was about like the fashion world and stuff, so you know, that's cute. I read Boy 21 by Matthew Quick, which I have a lot of mixed feelings about, but which is about a guy who is sort of quiet and a bit of an introvert, and then this kid comes to school whose parents have like been murdered, and he tells everyone that he's an alien from outer space, and they have to call him Boy 21. And it sounds really weird, but it is really, really sweet and really well done. And there are some scenes in it that are really powerful. So it's a quick read. It's not very long, but I would recommend it. He's the guy that wrote Silver Linings Playbook. So if you're into that, you might want to check out Boy 21. And I read Masquerade by Kylie Fornasia. I don't know how you say your last name. And it was okay. I didn't love it. It's her debut, and I always feel bad like ragging on people's debuts. But it was just not that it just wasn't that well written. And it was sort of a combination of like Taming of the Shrew and I guess like all these sort of Shakespearean tropes, and I just didn't think it worked out that well. It was, I don't know, I wasn't very invested in the characters, so I kind of didn't care when they were having all of their drama. And then I read Silver Shadows by Rochelle Mead, which was fine, I guess, if you're into Bloodlines. I don't know. Did you read it, Jen?
I did. I reviewed it.
Oh, yeah. And and
the pacing was off for me. It felt really slow. At times.
I think The Fiery Heart was really good, and compared to that, this was a bit of a letdown.
It felt like a transition novel.
It did. It really did.
It really did.
That's fine for the start of the series. It's a little weird for like right towards the end of it, I found. But also, I think if you're super invested in that relationship between those characters, you're gonna love this book. But I'm not at all. I like the side characters a lot more. So you didn't see any of them, so that was super sad.
Yeah, the ending is definitely towards Sidrian fans.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, take from that what you will. Like, if you like the, as I think I said about this one and also the next one I was going to talk about, they're very much fan books. Like, if you're a big fan of that, those characters, of those, like, relationships, if you're in that fandom, you're going to love these books. And if you're not, you're going to be like, I don't understand why anyone would read this. Because it's just one of those things. So yeah, I read for the Divergent collection, which was really cute. I really liked it. I think I've said before in here how I'm kind of more interested in Four as a character than in Triss. So for me, that was really cool. But I probably would have liked it if less of the stories were centered around Triss and more of them were around Four, because even though it was from his point of view, they were still about like, oh, this girl, and like, I can't stop thinking about this girl, and who cares for. So that was kind of everything that I've read. And I'm currently reading Every Word by Ellie Marney, which is the sequel to, I think it was Every Breath, which was those modern day Sherlock Holmes books that I've talked about before, which are set in Australia, and they're about like a girl and a guy, and you know, they're like Holmes and Watson, but not really. But they're also set in a world where Sherlock Holmes exists, so it's not like, you know, elementary or Sherlock where that's like the manifestation of them. It's like, you know, their parents had a joke and thought it'd be funny to name their kids after the Sherlock Holmes characters. So I find that very like meta and very funny. So I enjoy these books a lot. And that's everything. And I'll stop talking now.
Woohoo! All right. So for me, I've read a book called The Anatomy of a Misfit, which I have to say, initially trying to get into it, I really didn't like the main character. So it was a really hard book to get into. But it touches on a lot of very socially heavy topics. So it's an interesting read. I'm not sure I'm truly in love with it, but part of it is based on the author's real life history with some violence in a school setting. So it's interesting, but the main character just is really unlikable in the first 50 pages, and it's really hard to get into as a story. And Red Silver Shadows, and we kind of just talked about that already. I read The Jewel. Now, The Jewel is a dystopian novel, which we all know is not, like, my favorite. It's a little bit like The Selection, and maybe a little bit like The Hunger Games, in a sense. It's about this dystopian society where, basically, it's an island, and the island is segmented into circles. And the middle circle, at the center of everything, is the city, the Jewel. And that's where the most wealthy people live, the people who started the island and everything, or who started the land. And so, of course, they're ridiculously wealthy. They have everything they could ever need, food, clothes, money. But the one thing they can't do is procreate. For whatever reason, they can't have children. So for whatever reason, there are five rings, and the outermost ring is the marsh. And in that ring, those girls not only can have children, but they have augmentaries, I think is what they're called. And they can have, not only can they have children, but they have special powers. So they can change the shape of things. They can change the appearance of things, and they can make things grow faster. Those are the three augmentaries. And so the girls who have these special abilities are tested when they're young. And as soon as they realize they have these things, they're taken away and put into like this place where they're kept safe until they're old enough. And then they go to the auction in the Jewel, and they get auctioned off to the highest bidders from the Jewel and the Bank Street area. And it's kind of how it goes. And we follow the story of this one girl who gets auctioned off and who's meant to get pregnant. And basically her life will be, she acts as a surrogate. Once she has the baby, she's then sterilized and sent off to live somewhere in like another, like almost like a prison. And that's her life. So it's kind of depressing and weird. It was a little slow to start, but once I got into it, I just kind of got like fascinated by how ridiculous it all was. So there's that. And, I mean, it's interesting. Another one I read was called Stitching Snow. It is a sci-fi take on Snow White. It's really hard to read this one and not want to compare it to the Lunar Chronicles. I'm not going to lie. It's an interesting book. It's different. But it's really challenging to not compare it to the Lunar Chronicles, which is an exceptional series. And then the last one I read was called Mary the Summoning. And in case you haven't guessed, it's all about Bloody Mary, the urban legend. And it's kind of cool. It's a fun read. It's scary. It's a great Halloween read kind of thing. So I like that one. And those are the books that I've read this week.
Cute. God, you guys make me feel like such a terrible book reader. I'm not, but I'm just not.
You are.
No.
You are, though. We had this conversation when I was at your house, and it's because you watch 45 TV shows and I read books.
That's not literally even exaggeration.
No, like, yeah. I thought about that carefully. I was like, that's about accurate. Yeah. Yeah, so you do that and I read my books, and that's the trade-off.
See, I always have the TV running in the background as I'm reading, so I can do both. I'm terrible. I know. I don't know. Sometimes it's hard for me to read if there isn't like sound in the back. It's strange. My mind is very weird.
Oh, yeah, I have music on.
Yeah,
I need
music on.
See, yeah. I can't read at all with any music or anything. I need complete silence.
Yeah, I found that with some people, which is weird for me.
Yeah, no, I have to have something. Otherwise, I get a little like antsy. I don't know. All right, so let's get on with it. Are you guys ready to discuss The Queen of the Tierling?
Yes.
Let's do it.
Woo. Okay, so first and foremost, was this a buy or a borrow for you? And Marima, you can start.
If no one has told you anything about this book, then you can buy it. And if someone has told you that this book is amazing and it's going to be the next biggest series and it's going to be the greatest thing of all time, then you should borrow it, because that's when it becomes terrible. But if you have no expectation, I think this is one of the times when life tells you, like, it's really good just to not have expectations about anything. If you don't have any expectations about this book, like, I think you'd quite enjoy it. But I had lots of expectations and I did not enjoy it. So I would say borrow.
Okay, Kyle?
I had no expectations other than the fact that it was, like, highly, like, regarded to be, like, this huge film project with Emma Watson, and, like, it got this six-figure deal. But, like, other than that, I was just like, okay, well, I got to see what's going up. I didn't really hold it that high in my head. And so when I'd read it, I'd actually really thoroughly enjoyed it. I really liked it a lot. I would buy it. I would tell you to buy it. And it's something that I would say buy, not just for this book, but for this series that it's going to be. I feel like it has the potential to be an amazing series. And so if not just for this one book, buy it, because you're going to want to buy all three when they come out, I feel like.
Okay, Karen?
I'm actually probably a pretty good mix of both Merrima and Kyle, because I had fairly high expectations and I was a little disappointed. Not to say that it was bad or that I didn't enjoy it, because I really did, but as I was reading it, I was trying to figure out why there was so much hype around it, and I really see the potential there. And I think, Kyle, what you were saying about, like, buying it for the series, because it really does have this potential to be something big, I think. So I would recommend buying it, but just try not to, like, yeah, put it too high up on a pedestal, because you might be a little disappointed.
Okay. I'm a little torn, because the book itself, like, I have a hardback copy, and it is a gorgeous book to have on your shelf. Like,
yes, no joke. It is.
The end papers are beautiful.
I love the ribbon.
Yeah, it's got a ribbon in it. It's got deckled edges. Like, it's gorgeous as a book. So if you like having really pretty books on your shelf, absolutely buy it. And you're going to read it or whatever. Absolutely. If you're just looking to read the story, I would suggest borrowing it to start and maybe see where the series goes. Because I think it does have a lot of potential, but I don't know if it's going to be executed or not. Like, the first book had some really great parts to it that I really loved, but it took me a good solid 100 pages to get into the story. And I think, Karen, you had the same issue where you were like, Jen, really? And, like, I was like, no, you gotta get to page 100.
Yeah.
And once you hit page 100, you're gonna be okay. But, like, it really took a lot to get into it, and that was a really hard part for me, because I have so many things to read. If a book is taking me a really long time to get into, a lot of times they get put aside and I never pick them up again. And I wouldn't necessarily have picked this one back up again had it not been that we were doing it for book hype. I mean, I'm glad I did. I did enjoy parts of the story, but going into it, there are some things that I don't think people knew either. Like, I knew going into it that the book is actually set in the future. I know some of you guys didn't, and that was really confusing.
Nope.
And so that was super confusing. So I think that there needed to be some clarity too, as you're, you know, when you have the copy on the back or on the jacket flap, it would have been helpful to clarify that, I think, a little bit more for people.
And I'm not delirious in thinking that they didn't mention that in any of the synopses or any of the flaps, right?
I don't think they did. I had a lot of promotional material, so that's why I knew.
Okay.
Because
I feel like that was not widely.
No, like, I don't think it was.
Mm-mm. I don't think so either.
And I have.
Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say, like, about what you were saying, Jen, about the actual book. Like, I think that's totally true. And the copy that I read was an arc.
Yeah.
And it had a super obnoxious pitch letter in the front of it from the publisher. And, like, none of this helped.
Yeah.
None of this helped me be like, oh, cool, I'm, like, going into this with totally fresh eyes and whatever, because it was like, even the way that I read it was hyping it up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And being pitched as the female Game of Thrones was the stupidest thing in the world, because not only is that alone just a ridiculous statement to make ever, but just the book in general has no relation to anything Game of Thrones. Like, there's,
oh,
like,
I wouldn't say that.
Only, I feel like the only thing is the only thing that I feel like that is similar to Game of Thrones is, like, the whole kingdom, like, era type feel that it has. Like, there
oh, like
aren't
the whole setting? Yeah, that.
Yeah.
And maybe some of the, like, plot points, just a few about, you know, fighting over who's going to be in charge.
Like that, but, like, there aren't a whole bunch of families trying to, like, kill each other for all this stuff. Like, it's just two kingdoms fighting against each other, which I feel like...
Oh, there's fighting within the one kingdom.
Oh, yeah.
Against the uncle, and everyone's trying to kill the girl. I mean...
I understood where they were coming from with the Game of Thrones thing.
I thought that pretty clear, but...
The future thing. I still need to complain about the future thing.
We're getting there. Don't worry. Start with setting. And the first question under setting, if you notice, is, did you know it was set in the future?
I know. I scrolled down to it.
Which you've all answered. No, you had not. At what point did you figure it out? Or were you just, like, Kyle actually messaged me and was like, did I miss something? And I was like, yes.
Well, like, I messaged you and I was like, okay. Like, she is the most uncreative person ever, because she names her things Pasadena and, like, North London. And, like, come on. Like, really? And then she was like, it's set in the future. So, like, it's... Oh, I was like, oh.
It's kind of like when the British moved here and the Pilgrims came over. There's a new London in Connecticut, for God's sake. I mean, it's not like things are different. There's a Bristol in Connecticut. I mean... It's typical. People don't really like to change the things they already know just because they've moved something.
That was fine. That I had no issues with any of that. And honestly, I don't have any issues with it being set in, like, a quasi future from our current whatever. But when they got to the bit where they were all reading the books and they were like, oh, they found the 7 volumes of Rowling. I was like, I'm done. I'm done with this. I put the book down and walked away from it. Like, I'm not kidding. And then I went back to it. And, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. And I was like, okay, I understand that she was trying to make her, like, relatable by being like, look, she reads the same books that you read. And, like, look, she's connected and blah, blah, blah. But no, like, that was not necessary. I found that really, really obnoxious when I was reading it. Because it means that it's, like, this world. It's, like, a future of this world rather than a future of, like, this time where the names and things are kind of relevant. Do you know what I mean? Like, the bit about it being the future, apart from the fact that it's suddenly medieval, that makes no sense to me. But just about it being the future, okay, whatever. But, like, that bit was, that was too far. That was too much for me.
Yeah, I agree, actually, because I had been getting inklings up until that point that maybe this was a world that we could, that was a little bit more relatable to us, and that it was sort of like a future thing. And then it got to that part about Harry Potter, and I was like, I don't know. Actually, I think I messaged you too, Jen. I was like, they just found the Harry Potter books, and this is kind of weird. And yeah, it actually takes you out of the story, I think. And I agree. I get why she did it, but it just, I don't think it hit me the way that she wanted it to hit the audience. And other than that, I like the idea that this is a futuristic world. I mean, I don't get why they went back to medieval times either, but I'm hoping in the subsequent books, like, that'll be explained. But I did sort of like that you were able to position yourself within the world, because she was talking about New London and all of these places that were similar to what we know today. So that was kind of cool, and I'm definitely interested to learn more about the history of how this, like, version of the world came about. But yeah, it didn't quite work for me either.
Yeah, I liked it a lot, but it just, the execution, like, the idea is amazing, but the execution was just poorly done. I feel like, especially with the whole medical thing, like all of the, like, they had one medical ship that was supposed to come over the crossing and it sunk, and now they're all screwed. And, like,
but that's not true. They have some medical things. They don't have as much. But I mean, that's just the way she's choosing to tell her story. So we don't know what caused the catastrophe and what caused everything to be set back and why the world is shaped the way it is. Because if there's a map in the hardback book and the map is different, like, you can see where Mortmence is and you can see where the Tierling is and the other things around it, and the earth itself is no longer shaped the way we would know it. So that's different too.
Yeah, but I find, because there was no effort made to explain the medieval thing in this book, it felt to me like she wanted to tell a medieval story and she wanted it to be futuristic, and she just decided, okay, we'll just do both of those things with, like, no effort of explanation. It wasn't the kind of thing where it was like, we're going to hint at this, but we'll come back to it in the next book so that you feel like she's definitely going to address it. Like, nothing that I read in this book tells me she's even going to come back to this and be like, wow, why did they revert to this, like, super sexist, like, really primitive society? That's weird, because, like, it's the future, you know? There is nothing in here that tells me that. So that's right, why exactly. It frustrates me.
I absolutely understand.
It reminds me of,
up there.
It reminds me of Lucy. I saw Lucy like 2 weeks ago. Horrible movie, terrible. And they don't explain anything. They just do things and you're expected to accept it. And it feels like that's what a couple of the things in this book are like. Like, it's different. Why? It just is. Like, I might explain it later, but I might not. And that's how it feels in this first book.
Kyle, you were so excited at the start. What happened in the last 5 minutes?
I know. I have a lot of problems with this book, but I really like it too. Like, I really, really liked it.
Oh, that's good. Okay.
Yeah, I really liked the characters and I actually wasn't bored at all. Like, I it was definitely slow, but I was so interested in, like, everything. So, like, even from the first, like, 100 pages, I was still like, I love this. But I do definitely have my issues with it, as you can tell.
Okay. So, once we kind of establish where we're at, we meet Kelsey, and she's living in this, like, little cottage in the woods. And she's with these two caretakers because she was basically hidden away when she was a very young child because, for all intents and purposes, her mother was an incompetent idiot who was very self-centered, who had several abortions and miscarriages and such. And she was never really meant to have a child. That was the goal of her brother. And then she had this child. And the big mystery, essentially, throughout this entire book is, who is Kelsey's father? We never learned that. And whoever it is, it's kind of a big deal. Did you guys get that vibe too?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
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 It's like Jon Snow's mother. We get it.
I know.
Stop talking about it.
See, exactly. So that kind of comes up. And then Kelsey, when she turns, her mother dies when she's 7. And therefore, Kelsey is technically the regent. She's the queen. However, she cannot be crowned until she comes of age at 19. Therefore, her uncle, who is a disgusting, disgusting man, becomes in charge of the Tierling, and things only get worse under his charge. So, Kelsey, what did you guys think about Kelsey in the beginning when we first meet her?
I liked her. I think when we first meet her, I was kind of wondering where, like, which direction she was going to go in. And the first mention of her being sort of plain and, you know, maybe a little bit bigger than our typical heroines usually are, in Hollywood at least, was kind of refreshing. And I was like, okay, so yeah, she's meant to be sort of your run-of-the-mill girl who is obviously slated to become something a lot bigger. And I really liked the fact that she was a strong character, and throughout the book, she really grows through that, and she goes through a lot of stuff, actually, and you don't always see that in female-driven books. I mean, a lot of the times it's like emotional stuff, which is fine and obviously relevant and important, and people connect to that, but she went through a lot of physical pain as well, and with people trying to kill her, and I just really appreciated how the author, like, went in that direction. But I think the biggest thing for me was just, like, the constant reminder of how plain she was started to get a little grating.
Here's my big issue with Kelsey is she lives by herself. She's never seen anyone except these two people. How does she know that she's not attractive? Like, how does she know any of these things? She has no point of reference. It's like the bubble boy experiment or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, there's nothing for her to compare it to. So unless her, like, adoptive parents were like, P.S., you are super ugly, just FYI, then what is – and I felt like that with a lot of things in this where, again, just didn't really make sense, didn't like the body issues, didn't like the it's not, like, self-conscious. Like, it's totally fine to be self-conscious, but I didn't like the way that they dealt with the body issues, like the way the author dealt with it. I felt like it was very sort of patronizing.
I thought a lot of it was forced too. Like just the concept that she had body issues felt forced.
Right. I mean, that's what I mean. Like, why would she have them? She's never seen anyone else. Right. How does she know what an attractive person is? Like, it's the whole argument about society. Like, if you're removed from the forces of like advertising and like whatever, and meanwhile, like it's a medieval society, so being super super thin, pretty sure that wasn't like in vogue anyway. It was like be fat because it means you have money. But like whatever. She has nothing to compare it to. Like, she's not part of any of this. So it would have been more interesting to me if she didn't have any of these preconceptions and went into this world and then they were challenged, rather than like, oh, she's like really sad about herself because she thinks that she's not attractive. Like, oh, whatever, who cares?
Yeah, sorry. That was that was the one part, and that was the part I thought you were gonna have issues with. Yeah, when I read it. I was like, oh, ding ding ding, this is a Merriman issue. I can already tell you that. Because I found it annoying, and sometimes I can kind of get past that stuff, but I found it really annoying, especially in the beginning. It's so, like, heavy on the front end with that, but as we move further into it, it gets a little bit better, and once she kind of establishes herself in the tierling and stuff, it gets better, but it was really hard to get through that front end because it was all about that, and you're just like, oh my god, shut up and get on with it. Like, you have bigger things to worry about than your body right now.
Like, yeah, like, at the start, and I know we'll talk about him later, but when the fetch, like, captures them, and, you know, he's, like, bathed her, and then he's like, don't worry, you're not, like, pretty enough for me. Then she's upset about that. Right. Like, she's upset about the fact that this creepy dude didn't check her out when she was unconscious. Like, seriously? So, yeah. And the annoying thing was, I actually quite liked Kelsey as a character. I thought she was interesting. And like you said, it gets a lot better once she's kind of in the keep and doing her queenly things. But because of this like constant thing that sort of, it wasn't so much towards the end, but it did come back like constantly. I was put off by it.
Yeah. I mean, she has some redeeming qualities. I think that she has a lot of growth, and that as we move forward in the story, it'll be interesting to see where she goes as a character, because clearly the story is about her journey in a lot of ways. So as she continues to discover herself and discover more about her past, it'll be interesting to see how that shapes her as a person, and if it shapes her as a person. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think there's some interesting things that could come for her in the future. But I definitely... She was a rough one. There were other characters that were really interesting, and I think there are parts of the story that are really interesting, but she definitely had her moments where I was like, oh my god, shut up and move on.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about the Red Queen, because the Red Queen is the primary villain in the story, in a sense, but she's also very off to the side. She's like this ominous figure that looms over here in this other land that you don't really have to interact with. You just know that she does horrible things. And every now and then you get a glimpse of her perspective. So what did you guys think about the Red Queen? Like, what's her deal? Like,
I don't understand her. I don't get, like, she, like, I have no idea. I'm so torn because, like, I like the concept of the Red Queen, but, like, when I seen this book and heard of the Red Queen and like this whole story, I thought she was going to be way more evil. And like, obviously, like, she has slaves that she has sex with, and she is evil. But like, I feel like she's like, I don't want to invade. Like, it's too much work. I feel like a really, really evil person would have been like, like, screw them. They didn't send us our slaves, so we're going to invade anyway. I don't know. It was just very...
I liked the Red Queen until the end, when it turns out, like, oh, she's not actually in charge. There's some creepy, like, male-ish, like, evil presence that she sacrifices young children to and whatever. Like, at the start, I was like, oh, she's, like, Maleficent. Like, she's just crazy bitch because she wants to be. And I thought it was amazing. I really, really liked it. I was like, it was so refreshing to read a character that was just, like, crazy and horrible and evil, because they were like, I'm just gonna be these things. Like, I don't have a tragic backstory, you know. I was not tortured as a child. Like, I was not, my heart wasn't broken. Like, no one cut my wings off. I'm just mean. And I thought that was really cool. And then it got to the end and it was like, just kidding, nope. And then I felt very let down by the whole thing. So it would depend how that whole thing plays out, but up to that point, I really liked the Red Queen, apart from the, like, gratuitous sex scenes acts and things.
Yeah, right. And the sacrificing of children, you know.
Well, no. I mean, the sacrificing of the kid, like, didn't bother me so much in terms of the writing. It was the way that the sex scenes were written and, like, the fact that she had to be naked and stuff at the end. It all just felt super unnecessary just from on the author's point of view. So, unfortunately, like, most of those scenes were connected with the Red Queen, which made it a little harder. But, yeah, I liked her until it turned out she wasn't, like, in charge and she had no agency.
See, I actually felt the opposite way because I felt like throughout the story, she didn't necessarily have a good enough reason, in my mind at least, to do everything that she was doing. I mean, yeah, she wanted power and she had, I guess, some motivation, but it always felt a little off to me. And then at the end of the story, we kind of see, okay, there's a bigger villain than her and there's somebody else that's pulling her strings as she's pulling other people's strings. And to me, having that, like, multi-layer villain was a lot more interesting than just having her be the villain. But with that being said, I really liked the fact that both the hero and the villain were both women and that they were both strong female characters who were, they had personalities and they had their own quirks, and it wasn't just like a cardboard cutout of what we've seen in the past. So it was interesting, but I'm definitely on the side of, like, at the end, I kind of enjoyed the arc of the Red Queen more than I did in the beginning.
See, I feel like that kind of demon thing at the end sort of negated a lot of what she had done during the book. But I agree with you. I really enjoyed that. It was like they were two female characters and it was kind of between them. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's especially because the whatever that was at the end, we're going to have to think of something to call it, kind of took the form of this, like, super attractive dude. Yeah. The Game of Thrones. Seriously, like, the smoke monster at the end, like, took the form of this banging dude. And I was like, really? Like, that could have been a lady too, you know, like, it didn't need to be a, anyway. So yeah. So, but I can understand what you're saying, Karen.
Yeah. What more do you guys want to know about her? Like, I feel like her backstory, because she's been alive for a very long time. She's still young and beautiful because she clearly sacrifices people like it's her job. And so she's been alive and has existed for an incredibly long time. So I'm kind of curious about her backstory. And I think in book two, we get a lot more of that. There's a lot more focus on the Red Queen and who she is in order, like, to kind of be able to defeat her. So what do you guys think? What do you guys want from that backstory?
It's been a little while since I've read the book, but, like, she has more of a significant connection to Kelsey, right? And we don't necessarily know what that is.
I don't know if it's a significant connection, but she wants to destroy the Tierling, and she's always... Kelsey has some magic to her. I mean, we didn't mention that earlier, but that's obvious with the sapphire necklaces. And the Red Queen wants the necklaces for her own purposes.
Right.
So that plays into that connection between them, is that they both have elements of magic, except Kelsey seemed to be more organic than the Red Queen's, if you will.
I don't really care about her anymore.
Yeah, you're like, I'm done now. I don't want to know.
I'm kind of done with her.
Oh, right.
I want to know her connection to the evil thing and just
the smoke monster.
And who she is, because no one knows her name, so I feel like people in Tierling are going to know who she is, or like she's someone from something from the past that people are definitely going to recognize, cuz she's not revealing her name in anything, not any of the documents she signs or anything. She's just the Red Queen. So I feel like her history is going to be really important.
Oh, yeah. No, that was actually interesting. And I think it was, I don't know if it was because people in Tierling will know who she is, but I think a lot of, like, kind of pervading through the whole book was this idea of the power of names and the power of, like, knowing who someone is. So, like, there's Kelsey's father and there's who the Fetch is, and there's this idea always of Kelsey, like, being able to see who people truly are, and, you know, the Red Queen not revealing her name kind of goes along with that. That was really interesting. I liked that throughout it. So probably the name thing is, like, the most intriguing part of the Red Queen story.
Very true. All right, moving on. What do you guys think of the Queen's Guard? We have Mace, who was a pretty solid character, next to Kelsey, trying to kind of teach her the way and kind of keep her in control. And, of course, try to keep her alive because everyone wants her dead. So what did you guys think of Mace?
He was the best. I want a book about him.
Yeah, I really liked him, too. And I see Karen just capitalized pen.
Yes.
Oh, my God. How did you not put down pen?
Because Karen, I didn't have you a just copy beat of the me book to it right now, and I couldn't remember all of their names. And I read it, like, I read it legitimately, like, 4 months ago. So I'm like,
oh, but show pen.
Up. Pen. Yeah. Karen, I loved pen.
I was missing one. Don't worry.
I need to pen say, pen was like, my favorite. I kept imagining Penn as Podrick from Game of Thrones. Like, just this adorable. Like, I don't know why. But now I'm just like, oh, Penn. Like, oh, no. But Penn was the best character in the book. I think we can all agree on that.
Actually, oh, yeah. Between him and Mace, they were honestly my favorites. I really liked Mace.
Me
I
too.
Really liked how he sort of, like, he obviously cared about Kelsey, but at the same time, he wasn't afraid to sort of put her in her place and be the mean person when he had to be. And I really appreciated his honesty and his gruffness. And then basically on the opposite side of the spectrum, you had Penn, who was like so excited to just be a part of everything and wanted to help. And he was really adorable.
Yeah, I agree.
I think
they're like the dream team.
The King's Guard could definitely have their own tale.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's a lot going on there and there were a lot of fun. And I think they added a little bit of levity to the whole situation in a lot of different ways. And they also made it just a little bit more multifaceted with who they are, where they come from, why they choose to be King's Guard kind of thing. And I think that was really cool.
Yeah. And it was also, I liked the way that they kept, like, she kept wanting to know things from them, and they were like, well, just because the old queen is dead, like, doesn't mean that our oath is expired, which was actually very interesting to me. So the Queen's Guard were, we all agree, the Queen's Guard were the best.
Yes, they were.
So, okay, the whole thing with, like, the traitor in the Queen's Guard, I felt like I was so ready to get set up for it to be Penn, because everyone trusted him implicitly, and I was just, like, I feel like the whole little plot line was just almost pointless because it wasn't a shock. It wasn't anything that we were like, oh, my God. And it just, like, I feel like she had a missed opportunity there for, like, a really good twist. I'm glad it wasn't Penn, obviously, because I really like him. But was anyone else expecting it to be him?
He was one of the people I was wondering if it would be him. But honestly, I think I would have been really upset if it had, just because, like, he was such a good and honest and almost naive kind of character, like, very pure in my mind, and I wanted him to stay that way, so I am glad that it wasn't him. But I was looking for there to be a little more of a twist, I think, with who it ended up being.
Yeah, especially because she only talked about, like, 3 or 4 of the guard,
right,
in any detail.
And, well, Javel, who, if you're listening to this, clearly you've read the book, and if you haven't, well, now you're spoiled. But Javel, who is the one that, in the end, is the traitor, had gone through so much that, to some extent, you would never have expected him because of his hate for the things that have happened, kind of thing. So I think it was interesting that it was him in the end.
Wait, what are we talking about?
Weren't you talking about the traitor and the Queen's Guard?
Yeah, no, but
he was the
guy
wasn't the Queen's Guard.
The one whose name starts with M.
He was the gate guard, and then he was helping the Queen's Guard. The Queen's Guard was
Wrong one. Sorry.
Kyle, I think we pronounced that expertly, so we can now move on.
Yeah. Sorry. I'm like, oh, wait, wrong one. Too many characters, but I don't have a book in my hands. All right, so let's talk about two more characters. Let's talk about the Fetch, and let's talk about Thomas, who is the horrible evil uncle. So, the Fetch, what did you guys think of him? First of all, who the hell is he?
Like, good question.
Oh, I was going to say, well, for me, that's like, this was one of the biggest, like, most interesting parts of the book, was trying to figure out who the Fetch is. Because he wears a mask at first, so that nobody else will see who he is. So something tells me he's actually someone who's at court quite a bit, or at the keep, that he's visible in a sense.
At the end, when he kills Thomas and he takes the mask off, he says, "But you're dead." So it's like,
is he someone
that they know, but who was killed or something?
Was supposedly killed. Definitely. And I think that's part of it. Yeah, that's right. I remember that now. So yeah, so there's something to him. He's very, I don't know. I find him fascinating.
My theory is that he is Kelsey's father and she has the hots for her dad and she's going to be like, oh no.
Really?
No.
I feel like it's going
to I don't think he's old enough to be the dad.
I thought that he seemed relatively older.
I thought it said he was like 20 somethings, but he had eyes that were like super old.
I don't think he's that old. I don't think he's old enough to be the dad. Which, again, is that question, too.
I think he's old. Like, I think he's maybe has some, like, magic thing going on to keep him young or something.
Okay, that's interesting, too. What did you think, Karen, of the fetch?
Definitely interesting. I remember when we were first talking, right as I was starting the book, you were like, yeah, first 100 pages, a little bit hard to get through, but once you meet the fetch, everything gets better. And that's exactly what happened, actually. And so he was a really interesting character. I honestly have no idea who he is, but he obviously knows a lot about what's going on. My favorite thing about him is that he is very much in the moral gray area, because he's a thief and he's a murderer and he's done all of these bad things, but at the same time, he ended up giving Kelsey her other necklace back. And to me, that was like very important and something that he didn't necessarily have to do. So he has some motives that I think are above and beyond his normal sort of like, oh, let's just go, you know, kill people we don't like and steal from people and beat people up. So
right, and he also let Kelsey see his face, and he doesn't let anybody see his face.
Right. He's very complex, and I have a feeling that as the story unfolds, it's just going to get more and more interesting.
Yeah, and like, he was what kind of kept me reading through the story, because I like the mystery of him. And I'll be honest, as soon as I met the fetch on that first set of pages, I sort of cast him in my mind, because I know this is going to be a movie. So he was cast.
Tom Hiddleston.
You know it. Did you think that too, or did I tell you that?
No, I can't remember if you said or not, but like, as soon as they described him, I was like, oh, cheekbones. Like, yep. I got it.
Sign me up. I'm in. No, and just the way he's like, his playfulness, and there's something about him that I'm definitely Tom Hiddleston. So, you know, there's that to look forward to.
I think about the fetch, like, I agree. His storyline and kind of his character is the most interesting. And at the same time, that really annoyed me that this was a book about like two strong women and the most developed character was this like dude running around with nice cheekbones. So as far as like the story was conceived and everything, like that bothered me. But as far as the character goes, just if you take him by himself, I definitely think like he was what kept me reading. He had the most interesting storyline. And I, you know, it felt like he kind of had his own code that he worked to. Like, yes, he was a murderer, and yes, he was a thief, but there were some things that, like, he wouldn't do. And, you know, like, he didn't want to kill the mace because the mace was a really good warrior and stuff like that.
Right, he's
so,
Robin Hood-esque in a sense. There's something there along those lines, too.
Like, he's not working to your ethical code, but he's working to his own
one. He has an ethical code, though.
Right.
Which is not, you know... The Caden or the assassins do not have an ethical code, so.
Yeah, I just kind of wish that, like, that he had, I don't know. I think it's because of, like, the comparison between him and Kelsey in terms of, like, characterization. But because she spent most of her time being like, oh, like, he's super attractive. Why won't he, like, you know, make out with
she
me?
She was very teenage girl about the whole
and
thing.
And he was like, I'm, like, a super strong warrior and, like, shut up, girl, and, like, go away, girl. And I was like, oh, stop, please stop. So, yeah, that's, sorry. It's just that really, very, really bothered me. But, no, I mean, he could have a spin-off. He could have, like, the divergent things, like, Fetch, a Queen of the Tealing Collection. I would read the hell out of that.
Exactly. There's something, and his, you know, Merry Band of Men as well were also very interesting. Oh, yeah. I think there's a lot of backstory there that would be really cool to explore. So, loved the fetch. And then the last sort of character was Thomas, who is Kelsey's uncle. He is just horrific. Like, he's disgusting. Is that basically how everyone felt, or did anyone actually have any compassion for him?
Hell no.
Yeah, I didn't think so. He does some really horrible things, including give his people as like a sacrifice to the Red Queen. He sends off these boatloads of people to be basically slaughtered at the hands of the Red Queen. And he does it every year as kind of a, or is it monthly, as a tax to the Red Queen so that they leave him alone. So basically the Red Queen has the regent in her pocket, which all kind of shifts once Kelsey comes back into power, which is kind of where the book starts to pick up, is in that moment.
I liked that he was this, like, super weak character who was beaten by two ladies. That was good.
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
That was a good thing. Yeah.
And then in the end, he meets his end at the hands of the Fetch, which was also rather interesting and left me with a whole bunch of questions. So
it was really gratifying that it was him, that it was the Fetch at the end who had killed him. I was really happy about that.
Yeah, definitely. So what do you guys think about the plot? Like, how did you feel like the story overarching in general, like the journey to the Tierling and all of that stuff? And there's one bad guy we actually didn't talk about and a couple things that we can touch upon. But what did you guys overall think about the plot? Were you into it? Were there like, I mean, we've talked kind of about the highs and lows. Well, here's the one thing we didn't talk about. There's this whole kind of segment about the church, and it comes off very anti-religion in a sense. Did you guys get that vibe?
Yeah, ironically, for something about the church, it came off a little preachy.
Yeah, it was a very odd imbalance, I think, of not wanting it to be about the church and then, like you said, coming off preachy. And the church in this was kind of bad. It wasn't a good thing. And then there was another kind of bad guy, Arlen Thorne, I think was his name.
Yeah.
And he was kind of really bad, and he wanted to just appease the Red Queen to keep his game afloat in this kind of whole standoff with the Red Queen and Kelsey. So do you guys have any other feelings about the plot or anything we may have missed in our conversations?
I feel like I've said too much already about why I didn't like this book. So Kyle, why don't you tell us why you did like the book?
Okay.
Need some positiveness.
Okay. I really liked the book because I really liked the world that this was, despite the execution being really not as well as it could have gone. I really love the concept of like starting over, because I always feel like what would happen like in a revolution show, like they had to start over, but they still had like technology and stuff, but like I always wonder what it would be like if we were back in the Middle Ages. So that was really cool, and I liked the whole magic thing, and it just, the thing with her necklace, I really, really liked. I love the mystery about the necklace and what it is, and it feels like it's a really fun story to just kind of get yourself into and to like just sit down and like lose yourself in this world, because it was really a lot of fun. And I noticed when I was reading this, I think these are my favorite types of books, like medieval type books that have all of these different ways of doing things. I really, really enjoyed. Plus I like the fact that she keeps having crushes on like all these random men, because I'm like, yeah, like I know that deal. Keep going, keep do your thing, girl, you know. So
are we gonna take your phone away from you again?
No,
I feel
no.
like you need an intervention.
No, I'm fine.
I actually feel a lot of the same ways as you do, Kyle. And these kind of books are actually the ones that I have the most trouble with. You know, the high fantasy, the ones with like very expansive worlds. It's just really hard for me to dig into them. I like urban fantasies, more modern type of stuff. It's just easier for me to read. And I don't know why. I've just always sort of been that way, which is probably one of the reasons why I really don't have an interest in picking up A Song of Ice and Fire, because I have a feeling that it would be hard for me to get through them. So I was a little worried going into this book if it was really going to be my thing. But as somebody who does struggle with these type of stories sometimes, it was really easy to get through. I mean, the first 100 pages were a little bit slow, but it definitely intrigued me right from the beginning. And I think as an overall story, it sets up enough mystery and kind of answers just enough questions to satisfy you, but also leaves you hanging on just enough to make you interested in the sequel, which I am. I'm very interested in the sequel. I really want to know more about the history, but also more about Kelsey and her moving forward. So I think that's a really good balance of what the author was trying to do with the things that she left us hanging on. Yeah. You know, it's sort of funny, but I think I'm way more interested in this as a movie than as a book, which is sometimes blasphemy to say, as, you know, people who are really into books and always feel like, oh, the movie's not going to be as good as the book, like, ever. But I think this is going to translate really well on screen. And I mean, of course, I'm really interested to see Emma Watson as Kelsey and see what she's going to do with that. But I have a feeling that as they make this into a movie, they're going to be able to smooth out some of the parts that maybe we didn't feel in the book. And it's a very visual sort of book where there's fighting and there's a lot of beautiful, like, scenery, I think, that could come from it. And yeah, I'm really interested in the development of the film.
Exactly. I 100% agree with that about the film. And when I was reading this, I felt the same way I felt when I read The Maze Runner. And just stay with me, I know that that's a weird comparison, but when I read The Maze Runner, I was like, wow, this book is really interesting and really visual, but this author is terrible and the writing is awful and I can't read it. So when I was reading Queen of the Teeling, I felt very similarly that, like, as both of you said, the world building on its own, if you ignore the kind of future thing, if you can try and get past that a little bit and just ignore where they start name dropping JK Rowling, it's an interesting place that she's built here. Like, it's definitely an interesting world, and I just think that it was in the writing and, you know, like, some of the construction of it that is where it fell down, which is partly why I was so disappointed in it, because I felt like there was a lot of potential in the book. But in a film, I don't have to hear Kelsey's internal monologue about why she's not attractive. And, like, I don't have to actually read anything that this author has written. I just get to watch Emma Watson and probably Tom Hiddleston just, like, run around and have adventures. And
now we're just being super wishful thinking.
Aside from the fact that Emma Watson is, like, in no sense of the word, like, plain or unattractive or whatever, I think in terms of the story, I will enjoy it a lot more as a film, and it will work better as a film because, like you said, it will kind of lose some of those elements that just didn't work.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's a lot that can happen in a movie compared to
I wish it wasn't so hyped. Had this book not have been so hyped, I feel like maybe you guys might have enjoyed it a bit more, because there's so much, like, the expectation was so high. I feel like if this was a book that someone had picked off of a shelf and go, oh, this looks really cool, like, I might like this, they're gonna enjoy it a lot.
But the reality is the writing is still gonna be the writing. The flaws are still gonna be the flaws within the book. If I hadn't heard about it and it had just been sent to me and it was a book I had, I would have been interested in the premise. And I would have read it, and I would have still had the same issues with the first 100 pages being slow. Yeah. And I would have still have the same issues with some of the characterization and the internal monologue of Kelsey. That doesn't change because the book is hyped or it's not hyped.
Yeah, I would agree.
It's the writing itself. It's the structure of how she chose to portray certain things. I'm not saying it's an awful book, because I don't think it is. I think that there's a lot there to work with. It's a good first book. I mean, it's not anything to write home about, but I think that there's a lot there to work with, and there are a lot there to, like, to create bigger and stronger next books in the series.
I think the difference is, because it was hyped up, like, I was more disappointed than I would have been if I had just picked a book off the shelf, you know? So in addition to all of the issues that I had with the book, which I would have had regardless, because, like, I mean, I didn't have to look far to feel this way, you know, I didn't have to think hard about it. It was kind of how I felt as I was reading it. I just also felt disappointed that it was not what I had wanted it to be. But in terms of, like, how I actually felt about it, that didn't color it. So probably if I hadn't thought, like, heard anything about it, I would have read it and put it away and never thought about it again. Like, and I would certainly not have read any of the following books. But because it was really hyped up, I thought about it, and I, you know, we're discussing it on this podcast and et cetera.
Exactly.
So I want to ask, who is going to read the next book?
I'm definitely going to read it.
Yeah, I'll read it because I'm curious. But if it starts off as slowly and doesn't kind of have certain things that I want to read about in it, I can't promise I'll finish it.
Is it weird that I enjoyed the slow pace of that, of the beginning? Like, no. I really enjoyed it a lot.
It's just, like, personal preference.
Yeah.
I really liked, I mean, the beginning was slow, and I didn't necessarily enjoy that, but I like the fact that you have these themes and these issues that are obviously going to cover, like, the entire trilogy. I like the slow pace that not everything happens immediately, that she has to go through all these struggles, that by the end of this book, everything isn't fixed. I think that's really important in terms of storytelling. So in a lot of the same ways, I liked it being a little bit slower too. And I'm definitely interested in reading the sequel. I hope it's even better than the first one. And I think maybe now that all of this exposition is sort of established, I mean, I think we're going to get a lot of the history of the world in the second book, but I really would like to see a bit more action, and I think that'll really help it along. So yeah, I'll definitely be reading the second one.
Cool.
All right. So we have a little bit of listener feedback. We have basically two, and neither one of them liked it so much. Aubrey Lee says, I hated it. So much potential, but such poor world building and shaky characterization. And then Haley says, I got 70% of the way through and got distracted by better books. For some reason, it doesn't grab me, not even the action scenes. So, if you guys have read the book,
preach.
Tell us what you think, if you have a different opinion from the ones that we just heard. Because I'm really curious to know what people thought of it.
I feel like, in general,
it's had negative reactions from readers. I haven't seen anyone rave about
it. Negative reactions, really liked it. Like, it's either or. There's not like, eh.
But
like,
I haven't seen anyone who really likes it yet, apart from you, and even you had issues with it. Like, just in terms of, like, reader reviews, I'm saying, not critical reviews, where it's done okay.
I've when you guys were reading it during the summer, and, like, you guys were rating it on, like, Goodreads and stuff, like, Andrew rated it 4 stars, and I feel like someone else had rated it 4 stars. Like, I wonder why is this 4 stars? And I'm like, I read it, and I'm like, now I get it.
It's holding strong at like 3.86 stars on Goodreads with 2,000 reviews. So
yeah, I think what happens is the people who don't like it take the time to write a review for why they don't. And the people who do like it just like rate it.
Right, but usually they put the stars with it. So I mean, there are, do you know what I mean? It's still hanging at 4 stars even with lots of...
No, but I mean, that's why it seems like it's had negative responses, because they're the ones that are like essays that are written about it. Yeah.
And kind of, like we just did verbally.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Well, I don't use Goodreads, so this is my outlet.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, I just Googled it to see.
I could never. Oh, God, Jen, imagine if we use Goodreads, how much time that would take out of our lives.
No, that's what we use Hypeable for. Seriously. That's where we put our items. Our items go on Hypeable. It's better that way. So if we have nothing else for The Queen of the Channeling, I'd like to remind everyone that our next book for Book Hype will be Isla and the Happily Ever After.
Yay!
And I'm so excited to discuss that.
And it's going
to
be so positive.
It's
going to
be ridiculously a love fest, let's be real.
I love this book so hard.
it is. Oh, I love
question. Because I know both you guys weren't as into Lola as you were Anna. What did you think of Anna versus Isla?
Isla is more similar to Anna, but it's like a grown-up Anna.
Yeah.
Ooh. Is that how you would describe it?
Yeah, I agree. I definitely agree.
It feels more mature than either of the
first two. Right, and if you stop and think about it, Anna was her very first novel ever. And Isla, she's gotten a bunch of work under her belt now. So she knows how to, you know, for Stephanie Perkins, it shows her growth, really, I think, in a lot of ways.
Oh, yeah. And I think also just in terms of, like, the characters, you could argue that Lola deals with more mature issues than Anna does. You know, and Isla is like another step up from that again.
Right. And I really liked it. That Isla's story is different, I would say, than the others.
It's definitely. In structure. And
yeah, the structure is, and that's what I think I said to you when I first read it. I was like, oh my God, it's so good. And the structure is so different. And we had
I know. I read it in the car. I read it in the car, and then I had no one to like tell about how good it was. And they were just like, what are you doing? Like, what's happening?
And she was like, what is going on right now?
Basically.
Yeah. So no, but it is. I love. That
I think
book.
You'll really like it, Karen.
I do too, Karen. I absolutely think you will love
I'm really excited. Like I was excited before, but I'm glad to hear that it's going to be a little bit different because I think that was one of my qualms with Lola was that it felt. I mean, it was different than Anna, but it had some similarities, and I was just like, I've already read definitely. This. Give me something different. And so yeah, I'm really excited for Isla.
Yeah, no, Isla is fantastic. And Isla comes out on Thursday.
Which is good, so I can buy it and immediately read it again.
I know. I was just thinking that too. I'm like, wait, I need to read it again. And I'm like, I don't have a copy.
I'm holding.
Yeah.
So everyone should go out and get that so that you can discuss with us in a couple of weeks. And we're also going to have another special guest podcast. We're going to have Anne Aguirre and Nicole Chase on next week's episode, and they'll be talking about their new books and lots of fun stuff. So if you guys have any questions for them, you can tweet them or you can leave them in this post and we will get to your questions. And one last thing, and I forgot to mention it earlier, if you're going to the movies in a couple of weeks time, If I Stay will be out, and I saw If I Stay last week, and I have to say, for a book that I wasn't 100% in love with, the movie is like definitely better. It is really, really good. And it is way more cryworthy than The Fault in Our Stars. Way more.
Wow.
Very cool.
Yeah. Ooh, I was excited. It was really good, you guys. I was impressed. I was a little leery because you know how, you know, she's kind of like this in between and how do you, and in the book, there's a lot of time jump, like everything jumps. And in the movie, it's that way too, but it's a little more clear and a little bit more linear than it is in the book. So there'll be a couple articles up about it later, closer to release or right after release, but it's definitely worth checking out. And yeah, I would say definitely check it out. So that's something to look forward to on the, I think it's the 22nd of August it comes out. But definitely mark that on your calendars because I think it's, especially if you like The Fault in Our Stars or any of those kinds of adaptations, it's definitely in that zone. So you guys will enjoy it. Does anyone else have any announcements or anything? Did we miss anything?
Can I?
Cancel the Maze Runner.
Yeah!
Oh, that's right! I knew it! Yeah,
I was trying to be really calm and not like.
I got you back, Karen.
Thank you.
Go, Karen. Go. Tell us all about it.
Oh my God, it was so good, you guys. I can't even talk.
Karen saw The Maze Runner. In case you missed that intro, that was kind of, you know, at Comic-Con. She had the opportunity to see The Maze Runner, so she went, and then she was kind of speechless for about a day and a half, and then she's recouped a little bit.
Kind of.
Not much, obviously.
She's going to try and find her words to describe why she liked it now.
Yes. Okay. Deep breaths. I think I've said before on the podcast that The Maze Runner, the book, isn't one of my favorite books. I think it's good, but it wasn't something that really grabbed me. But I always thought it was really visual. So when I heard they were making a movie, aside from the whole Dylan O'Brien thing, I was really excited because I was like, wow, they can really, you know, sort of like what we were talking about with this book, they can really smooth it out and make it into something a bit better. Guys, and I'm trying to be like as, what's the word, objective as possible. Like, this is a genuinely good movie. They've taken all the elements from the book that I think were really important to have in there, and they've sort of condensed it and made it into a really exciting movie. And if you've read the book and you know about the maze and the grievers, you'll know that it's pretty scary in the book. It is terrifying in the movie. I was on the edge of my seat, and it was so action-packed and so scary that it will give you nightmares. I mean, it was that good. So hopefully everyone goes and sees it September 19th because I want a sequel.
I'm excited for this movie.
Oh, like I said, good.
And look on Hyperbole where there will be lots of Maze Runner articles written by Karen.
Karen will be writing lots of things coming up.
Basically a week of Maze Runner articles all written by Karen.
Yes. Yeah. And I will say that I didn't, I kind of volunteered, but Maren was like, so what do you want to write? This, this, and this. And I'm like, sure. I already had some stuff planned. So yeah.
There may have been a meeting behind closed doors, Karen.
What?
Where we just maybe assigned you some things.
Oh, yeah. Thanks.
What?
Thanks.
Anyway, lots of movies. And The Giver is out this week.
The Giver, yeah. The Giver.
I'm seeing it tomorrow. I'm so excited.
Yeah, its premiere was tonight and comes out on Friday, which should be really interesting. And we saw The Giver panel, Marima and I did, at Comic-Con, and it was really interesting.
It was cool.
It's really cool.
Lois Lowry is my favorite person in the world now. She just doesn't care. She just does not care. She's so sassy.
She is like, I am old enough. I have lived in this world, and I'm going to tell you what I think, no matter what.
Yeah.
You want to hear it or not, here it comes. And I'm like, whoa. Yeah,
she was the best.
She was amazing.
You know what I really like about The Giver? I mean, I haven't read the book.
How did you get through middle school and not read the book?
You know, it's really funny because it's one of those things that was always in the library and always on display, but I never had to read it for class. And I've always wanted to read it, seriously, since middle school. It's been a really long time, and I just haven't picked it up. So it's one of the books that's on the top of my list to get to soon. But, you know, I'm not part of, like, you know, that fandom or whatever. Like, I'm not a fan of it because I haven't read it. And so kind of seeing it from the outside, it was really interesting how in the beginning people were like, no, I don't want to see this movie. And they thought, you know, the whole thing with the black and white versus the color, and they were really ragging on the movie. And now it seems closer to the time it's coming out, now that some people have seen advanced screenings, people are really excited for this movie.
Got Meryl Streep in it. Like, what else do you want from me?
I haven't
read it either, but I'm just really excited because the premise sounds like amazing.
Well, you guys should read The Giver because it's like I live in Australia and I've read The Giver. Like, it's not on any of our syllabuses.
It wasn't on any of my syllabuses.
Read the others. I've only read the first one.
See, up here it's like on every middle school syllabus known to man. Like, it is part of your literature curriculum in middle school. So interesting.
That can be, that's some homework for you guys.
Yep. I feel an assignment.
Put on a teacher hat, Jen. Yeah.
And you are now assigned for summer reading. The Giver.
Was that
you? Also on every, oh, hell no. Are you kidding me? I work with teenage boys. With teenage boys, that would get me nowhere.
It would have worked on me.
Yes.
It did just work on Karen. She was like, okay, I'm writing it down.
No. I work with teenage boys. That is not the voice I use at all. So until next time, I guess you guys all have some assignments. Definitely make sure you get out there and get Isla when it comes out so you can read along with us and tell us how much you love it, because I'm pretty sure everyone's going to. Definitely check out The Giver, If I Stay Movies, both coming out. And then The Maze Runner comes out in September, so you've got a little bit of a wait for that one. But as Karen said, it's definitely worth checking out. So that's everyone's homework. And I think that's it. I don't think we've missed any movies that are coming out or anything big coming up, right?
No, I think we're good.
Excellent. Okay, so until next time, I'm Jen.
I'm Karen.
I'm Kyle.
And I'm Arima.
Goodbye, guys.